So hello, welcome everyone to another episode of Amphine. Today we're honored to have with us a distinguished guest, Dr. Marianne Miller, who's an eating disorder therapist and binge eating coach. She's dedicated her career to work with individuals having eating disorders and witnessing the joy and fulfillment that people experience during recovery. Please join me in extending a warm welcome to our esteemed guest. We're excited to have you here and eager for a heartfelt conversation. Thank you so much for accepting our invitation and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for extending the invitation and I'm happy to be on the podcast.
It's lovely. Thank you. So how would you like for this to go? Would you like for this to be a conversation or do I ask questions or what would you prefer?
Whatever you feel comfortable with, I could do either.
I think that's like an expert's answer, you know. It's like, I'm prepared. I know my shit. So whatever you say, I'm gonna answer it back, you know. I love the confidence. I love it. So starting with something pretty basic, what do you think are, what are eating disorders? So for people who don't know what eating disorders are, how would you sort of define them or explain them in like a layman term?
Sure. So eating disorders are a preoccupation with food, eating, and body image. Typically, most eating disorders have that preoccupation, ruminations, obsessive thinking about food, eating, and body image. Also, there are eating disorder behaviors that are that go along with that. And depending on the eating disorder, those behaviors can range from restricting food out of fear of gaining weight or trying to manage weight. Also, it could be purging food. So you eat food. Sometimes there's a binge where you eat large amount of food in a short amount of time and you make yourself vomit. There's also other kinds of behaviors that can come from that, which to try to compensate for the food that you eat. Sometimes it's over-exercising, sometimes it's taking laxatives or some sort of like diuretics to try to get rid of the food. And sometimes it's just binge eating where people eat that excessive amounts of food and they don't do any compensating behavior. That is pretty much eating disorders in a nutshell. There are all kinds of nuances and different factors and components to eating disorders. There is one eating disorder that doesn't have the obsession about body image. It's called ARFID. It's avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. And so with ARFID, a lot of times people might have a phobia of vomiting or choking on particular foods, or they have sensory issues with foods that have certain textures. And so they have difficulties eating food. And so they're very limited in the amount of foods that they can eat. So there is restriction, but no preoccupation with body image or body shape or anything.
Yes. That's too much information to take in for the first time, but yep. It makes sense.
Yes.
This is like a mental health podcast that we are at. Mm-hmm. When you define or when you say that there are eating disorders, how would you label them? Like, is there like a specific criteria for like a disorder? Like, let's say you tick box five of these things from this particular criteria, and then you have like this disorder or something on those lines, or is it more generalized?
That's a good question. I think that it depends on the disorder. If you're looking to diagnose a disorder, you typically have specific criteria. Like for anorexia, you have to have significant restriction of food, preoccupation with food, eating, and body image, a lot of distress about food, eating, and body image. And then other types of eating disorders have different criteria. And there is also kind of a catch-all diagnosis, which is other specified feeding and eating disorders. So
a little bit about me is that I'm doing clinical psychology. So most of what I study comes from like the DSM-5 or like the ICD-10 or 11, like the updated version. So my whenever someone talks about, let's say, anything that's not in the normative society that we find, my brain goes to, it's a disorder. Okay, how do we categorize it? Where are we putting it? Does it match the criteria? And is this person functional, or if this person is not? If this person is not functional, then we can, you know, maybe consider diagnosing them. So that's the reason I just simply out of curiosity asked you. That's something that you practice as well. But yes, that was good answer.
Yeah, I remember when I studied, you know, the DSM, I think back then it was the 4 or 3 TR. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. And remembering all those categories. The thing about eating disorders is that a lot of people can have it and still function quite well, because it's eating disorders has to do with different parts of the brain. So you know, parents might say, well, my kids are doing great in school. How could eating disorders be like a disorder? How could it be a brain disorder? And it's because we're talking about different parts of the brain. Like the part of the brain that's doing very well in school is functioning, but other parts of the brain are not functioning well.
Truth. I feel this is somewhere aligned with even when you say learning disability, that a person is not able to specifically cope with academics, but then generally they're doing well. You know, they're able to understand how to cross the road, or, you know, how to understand traffic lights, or how to, you know, learn a particular skill. It's just study related. It's just academics related that they're not able to cope with.
Well, that's a good, you know, way to think about it. Yeah.
So when you say that people have symptoms and there are symptoms that are given, how does someone identify themselves with like an eating disorder? Because Googling things up is not the right way. And I'm pretty sure not everybody has access to like a DSM-5 or an ICD-11. So then how do you recognize like the basic sign and symptoms for having an eating disorder?
So the biggest sign I think is when you're thinking about food, eating, and body image a lot. When it preoccupies your mind most of the time. Like a lot of my clients come to me and they have, you know, they're thinking about food, eating, and body image 60% up to 100% of the time. And it's just exhausting, you know, to be thinking about it that much. And sometimes I have clients who've been thinking that way since, you know, for decades. And so anytime anyone has a preoccupation with what they're eating, the type of food they're eating, and then except for ARFID, how their bodies look, there may be an eating disorder there, at the minimum disordered eating. And then you look at the behaviors and see whether people are restricting food, maybe restricting certain categories of foods, like carbohydrates is very popular for people to restrict in the United States. I think sugar is also another thing that people tend to restrict. Sometimes they cut out big categories of foods, and so they're very limited in what they can eat or what they're willing to eat, and so that adds to the restriction. And sometimes it's just they count calories; they count how many calories that they're eating, and try to keep it at a very low number.
Right. I mean, I have a younger brother, and he's a fitness freak, okay? And he sort of measures food and he eats. Like, I'm going to eat this amount of protein, and this is all what I'm going to eat. And a part of me wanted to diagnose him, you know? Part of me was like, maybe something is up with you. And all what it was that he was getting shamed at school a little bit, and he was not able to cope with it. So all what he wanted to do was reduce, like, 10 pounds and then feel a little more accepted. But then he got over that phase. We took him to therapy, and then he was better then. So he's not restricting on food anymore. But then I was scared. I was genuinely scared.
Yeah, it's really scary. Yeah, it's really scary. And so many more boys and men are getting into that. They're trying to, you know, muscle up and try to look a certain way. And there are so many influencers on TikTok and Instagram that are into that. And it's really sad. I just did a podcast, my own podcast, I did an episode with a man in England who does research on muscularity issues and eating disorders among men, and in terms of how they feel and the barriers to them seeking help. So it's because it's a lot harder for boys and men to get help, like, socially. So I'm glad your family stepped in and got your brother some help.
Yeah, true. I'm glad. What's the name of your podcast again, so we can sort of promote it too?
Oh, thank you. It's Dr. Marianne Land, an eating disorder podcast, or an eating disorder recovery podcast. Dr. Marianne Land is like this ideal world where there's no eating disorders and no diet culture and no pressure to look a certain way. So
sounds like a very beautiful land to be a part of.
Great land.
I hope there are too many sweets for people like us to binge it on, you know, just watch Netflix and binge it on nice proper sweets without
without having to worry about it. Yeah, without it being an issue. Yeah.
So how do you think, so let's say for my family, we were a little more woke because, you know, we saw it coming.
Yeah.
But then for people who are sort of not aware, we spoke about the signs and symptoms, but then how do you think we as a society sort of put people under pressure to go through this, you know, to go through an eating disorder for people who are functional until, let's say, their college life, and then suddenly it hits them that, hey, I have to be a particular size to fit in, or for those Zara and H&M clothes to fit me well.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, it's like I don't fit into any Zara or H&M sizes. And so in the store, it's like you might be able to order something online that's in your size, but there is so much pressure. And that's because of the severe anti-fat bias that's in our world today, is people equating weight and body size with health. And they say this, and with like this sense of morality. It's like, if you're a smaller size person, if you have thin privilege, you have you're a morally better person. You're better health person. And that's just not true. And so there is just such a pressure, even in our medical systems, to focus on, you know, getting people thinner, when a fat person or a person in a larger body actually can be healthier than some thin people. You know, I'm a woman in a larger body, and people may think, oh, you're going to get diabetes, you have diabetes. I have perfect blood sugar levels. Perfect. And there are many people in thin bodies who have diabetes. So you can't, you know, it's not, there's, it's just very unfair. And it's just not accurate. And so sometimes entire families are wrapped up in this diet culture, and they really teach the parents talk about it a lot themselves. They're very concerned about appearances and food and eating. And sometimes they restrict food, their kids' food. I mean, your brother was lucky because he had a family that was more woke to it, like you said. A lot of families aren't. So sometimes it takes something very serious to happen, where sometimes they drop so much weight that they're in medical, distress, and they have to be hospitalized, or they have other medical issues from vomiting too much, or their teeth start having problems, or they're just so miserable, that they have a hard time having relationships and they're isolated. So it takes a lot for people to get help. One reason I do my podcast and all of the work that I do is I just want more people to understand and learn about it. So there's not as much stigma, and also so there's not so accurate knowledge can be conveyed, because like you said, you look online and there's so much misinformation.
I feel the first time when I Googled what headaches mean, it took me straight to cancer. It's like,
oh yeah, oh yeah.
This is the first symptom of cancer. You maybe need to just get hospitalized. And I was so scared until dad came back home and he's like, Stephanie, it's okay. Just take some meds, rest, don't go to school tomorrow, and then you'll be much better. And I did feel better. It felt like someone is just throwing it in my face. But yes. Yeah.
Don't trust Dr. Google.
I feel Dr. Google is very nice for materialistic things that you can pick and count on, but not when it comes to you as a person with emotion.
Yeah.
Because that hurts.
And it hurts.
It's deep rooted. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now that we've spoken about society, what do you think are good ways or some tips that you'd share for people to be less likely to be diagnosed with an eating disorder? Something that they can do to keep themselves positive, some healthcare tips or something of those lines, something a little cute.
I would say really understand more about diet culture and understand how pervasive it is. One of my dietitian friends uses the analogy of it's like we're like the ocean and we're all fish swimming in the ocean, and diet culture is the water, and we don't realize we're in it. We're all just kind of swimming, just doing our thing. And then one day someone's like, do you realize we're swimming in diet culture, right? And then when your eyes are opened and you see it, you can't unsee it. So realizing how much focus is put on getting thin and privileging thin over fat, comedy and making fun of people in larger bodies, that is just so pervasive. Even in children's books, like when you see they have characters who are fat and they are seen as like stupid and slow, or they're the villain or mean, and they drool all the time and they have like weird bumps all over their bodies. It's just very it's very mean. And then also the accessibility issue of as much accessibility for people in larger bodies. It's harder to buy a car that fits them, that with seats that fit them. It's very hard to ride an airplane. It's hard to it's hard to find clothes sometimes. You can't go into an H&M or a Zara and just pick up pick up some clothes that you want right away. And so I think the recognition of thin privilege in our world today and the anti-fat bias, I think is important to teach even at a young age. And instead of seeing fat as a bad word, because that equates fat with calling someone ugly, is really teaching that fat can be a very neutral word. They're fat, and that's why I call myself fat. Is I'm trying to neutralize the world, the word, and make it seem like I have very good morals and values, and I think I'm very cute, and so
you are. Yes,
we are. And and I'm fat, so they're not mutually exclusive. So even those who don't have eating disorders, I think, can be aware of the marginalization and oppression people in larger bodies have. I think it's important.
Yes, I feel the more fat you have, the more love you can offer, because aww, that's how kind you are to yourself. So that's how aww much you give to the other.
Oh, that's so sweet. And it's always nice to hug a fat person.
Yeah.
It's very comfy.
Best hugs. Yes.
Best hugs.
Truth, yes. So I personally don't have any more questions for you. Do you want to ask us something or anything?
How do you think eating disorders are seen in India?
Quite honestly, I don't feel they're recognized enough, because I've been studying psychology for like 7 years now. Mm-hmm. And I have hardly seen 2 cases with a psychiatrist for like an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And people were very candid and casual about it. It's nothing about, them not being able to eat. It's maybe the stress, so give me medication for stress, or give me medication, yeah, give me a certificate which would say that I'm not able to go to school because of XYZ health reasons, which is not related to eating, because the kid was eating food and then they were puking it out. And it was just difficult for the family to figure it out. But I feel it's not recognized enough, because a lot of people just don't see it as a disorder. A lot of people still think that, this is a phase. Some people binge eat. And it's been taken very lightly and commonly. Yeah. So that's something that all of us need to work on collaboratively. And I feel anxiety and depression are a little overhyped. No offense. It's just that when someone sees someone feeling a little low, they're like, oh, that's depression. But when someone sees someone overeating and then puking it out, nobody's like, oh, maybe you need to visit a doctor.
Right. And you're right. I think in many times, even in the US, doctors can minimize eating disorder symptoms. I mean, I remember years ago having a client who had a very low heart rate, and it wasn't recognized. Actually, this has happened multiple times where the physician didn't recognize it as something scary that needed to be treated. They're like, oh, they're athletes, so they're going to have low heart rates. When they have low heart rates because they're not eating, they're restricting their food, and they need to be in the hospital. So it's really scary how that can happen because of lack of knowledge. So yeah, so I'm glad you're doing this podcast, and I'm glad that all of you listeners are listening, so you can learn more about eating disorders and spread the word.
Right. Thank you so much for being here with us. And for everybody listening to this, this is a step that you're taking towards your own growth. So kudos. I'm proud of you.
Yes, I'm proud of you too.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good day.
Oh, bye. I'm happy to be here.